In the last few weeks, we've watched with astonishment and sometimes surprise as the iron fist rule of Tunisia's president, Zine El Abidine Ben Ali, crumbled. Weeks of growing public protest and anger led to his 23-year legacy to collapse in just a matter of days as he fled the country, 1.5 tons of gold in tow. And we've been watching as possibly the same fate unfolds for Egypt's three-decades-long ruler, Hosni Mubarak, and similar protests in Algeria and Jordan, a wave of public protest, anger at the rule of tyranny and demands for a better future. The scenes in Tunisia have been likened to another event. Thirty-two years ago, it was Iranians who came out by the millions and overthrew the country's monarchy. This program, we discuss a historic day, the 11th of February, 1979, the day of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. The Islamic Revolution refers to the events involving the overthrow of Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, the last monarch of Iran, and its replacement with an Islamic Republic under Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, the leader of the revolution. The revolution was unique for many reasons, for the surprise that it created throughout the world and the waves it sent through the region. It lacked many of the usual causes of a revolution, like the defeat of war, a financial crisis, or a military uprising. It produced profound change at great speed and overthrew a Western-backed, lavishly financed and heavily armed regime. It was a true people's revolution. As Iran marks the 32nd anniversary of its Islamic Revolution, we look back at some of its causes and effects and at some of the fundamental thinking behind it. And we will look at more recent events in Iran, regionally and internationally. How have they impacted the revolution, and how has the revolution impacted them? Looking back on the roots and causes of the Islamic Revolution is a maze of history, politics and ideology. But a good place to start is the main motto of the movement: Independence, Freedom, Islamic Republic. Mottos, says former Iranian diplomat and professor of international law Kazem Sajjadpour, are a pivotal part of revolutionary discourse.
The mottos are so important that after two centuries, still fronts refers to them. And I think these three mottos of the Iranian Revolution are also very important, and it cannot be ignored by anybody, not just today, I think even in the future. Why? Because they are reflective of national desire. It is reflective of long-term desire, and it's also the result of social circumstances and international situation.
By looking at the foundations to each of these three ideas, independence, freedom, and Islamic Republic, we can build a better picture of the root causes of the Islamic Revolution. Independence, a long-time passion and struggle for Iran, with a history of dictatorship, puppet leaders, and coup d'etats. Iranians are vehemently against interference, and a lot of their experiences of exactly that, interference, are bitter memories of America. 1953 in Iran, the first democratically elected Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh is in power. He's widely popular for nationalizing the country's oil industry and taking it out of the hands of the big Western oil giants. As Mossadegh's popularity and power grows, the Shah flees to America. While there, American CIA organizes a military coup d'etat against Mossadegh and replaces him with the Shah, who returns to Iran and maintains an ever closer relationship with the US government. The Shah was an autocratic ruler, seen by most as a puppet to the United States, who felt indebted to give them whatever they wanted. The relationship between the two reached new levels on October 3, 1964, when Iran's parliament ratified a law giving Americans in Iran indefinite immunity.
عظمت ارتش ایران را پایکوب کردند. اگر یک خادم امریکایی، اگر یک آشپز امریکایی مرد تقلید شما را در وسط بازار ترور کند، زیر پا منکوب کند، پلیس ایران حق ندارد جلو او را بگیرد. دادگاه‌های ایران حق ندارند محاکمه کنند.
Those were the words that sowed the seeds of the Islamic Revolution.
As he began to speak the truth about the corruption of the monarchy, he gained more and more supporters. He became, of course, we know in the course of history, he became an Ayatollah Lozma, or a Grand Ayatollah. And at that time, he had many followers. He became the Marje Taqlid, or the person worthy of emulation, for maybe we estimate 60% or 70% of all Shia Muslims in the world.
People took to the streets in protest. In response, the Shah sent Ayatollah Khomeini into exile, and so started 14 years of his absence in the country. It was in those years that the budding Islamic revival began to undermine the idea of westernization as progress, the basis of the Shah's secular regime, and instead formed the ideology of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Jalal Ala Ahmad's idea of Qarzadagi, or West toxification, that Western culture was an intoxication to be eliminated. Ali Shariati's vision of Islam as the one true liberator of the Third World from oppressive colonialism and capitalism, and Murtaza Motahari's popularized retellings of the Shia faith, all spread and gained supporters. But most importantly, Ayatollah Khomeini preached the religious foundations of fighting against injustice and tyranny, to aspire for freedom.
The Islamic religion actually sets out the outlines for what should constitute a proper or a just state. And so if we bring the state into line with the ideals of Islam, then we're doing nothing more than being in essentially good Muslims. And what we find in the political side of the exercise of Islam is that people are trying to establish justice, they're trying to establish equality, they're trying to establish charity and goodwill toward everybody who exists within the state.
The protest movement really started to gain momentum, and by January 1978, major demonstrations turned violent as the Shah's forces killed tens of protesters. From the summer onwards, the protests grew into paralyzing general strikes and demos, shutting down vital industry and the economy. The Shah finally admitted defeat and left Iran for exile a year later in mid-January 1979. After 2 weeks of a power vacuum, Ayatollah Khomeini returned to Tehran, greeted by several million Iranians, far more than just a hero's welcome. By February the 11th, it was all over for the Shah and a new beginning for Iran. According to historian Charles Kurzman, author of The Unthinkable Revolution in Iran, even discounting for exaggeration, these figures may represent the largest protest event in history. So, we've covered independence and freedom in the motto Independence, Freedom, Islamic Republic. It was time for the final step. The country voted overwhelmingly in a national referendum to become an Islamic Republic on April 1, 1979, with over 98% of the vote. Modern-day Iran was born. But it was a decision rooted in much ideological debate. It's said that the Islamic Revolution was an equation made of three parts, the people, the leader, and Islam. The people were already out on the streets. The leader was clear, Ayatollah Khomeini, so it came down to the role of religion, Islam, and the formation of the Islamic Republic. At that time, religion playing such a pivotal role in international relations or politics was simply unheard of.
Before the Iranian Revolution, there was not much attention in international relations as a field to a force such as religion. But after that, today you see now religion has become a part of all social science discourses on the study of the behavior of international forces. And you see all religions right now play somehow a different role. They have created a special space in international relations, especially Muslim forces. And I think this global impact of Iranian revolution in bringing up the issue of religion is also a significant issue.
The vast majority of Iranians were very religious, but they lived in an imposed secular Iran where, under the Shah, religion was looked down on and had been shunned. It was seen as a secular Western view of religion. What Ayatollah Khomeini did was come and reject this idea outright. Religion, he said, covered all areas of life, the individual, the family, society, law, and politics. If religion covered all areas of life, then it should too be the basis of a political system. This idea was labeled political Islam, but not by Iran.
The term political Islam was a term that was actually conceived in the West. It was not a term that was ever used in the Islamic world before Western powers started to talk about it. But they wanted to make a distinction between Islam as a religion and Islam as a political force.
It was not a distinction seen by Iran's religious leadership, and particularly Ayatollah Khomeini, who saw fighting against political tyranny as a personal religious obligation. He felt that this aspect of Islam had not been paid enough attention to. We spoke to historian Michael Opaskalski in Berlin, who explained that it was not that Islam was being politicized, more so that Islam in itself was political.
All the theoreticians of political Islam are saying that resistance against oppression, resistance against exploitation, resistance against any attempt to trample on national sovereignty is a tool of the people and part of political Islam. Therefore, you can understand many movements in the world who are based on political Islam, who are active today. And it is very much on the line that is written in Quran, which says God doesn't change the destiny of the people unless the people have changed itself, and it starts today, every minute.
Iran was important to the United States because of its history, strategic location, and the friendly leadership it had enjoyed up until the revolution. In fact, America didn't even consider Iran in danger of a revolution. A CIA analysis just 6 months before the event concluded that Iran is not in a revolutionary or even a pre-revolutionary situation. A misreading of the situation that experts say still continues, even today.
The people of the United States in 1978-79 just did not understand the revolution. They really didn't. The Americans have very short memories in terms of history and politics. And they thought, I think many people in the United States really truly thought, that the United States was an ally of Iran and that the United States was actually helping Iran and helping the Iranian people. They didn't know very much about the repressive tactics that were undertaken under the Shah. They didn't realize that the United States had been selling arms to Iran that was designed to protect Iran against communist influence, but that those same military arms were being used against the people of Iran itself.
The Iranian religious leader, the Ayatollah Khomeini.
From the day that the Islamic Revolution succeeded, the Western media has dealt with Iran paradoxically. They call the Islamic Republic both weak and strong at the same time, and they represented Imam Khomeini as both a figure to be feared, but also admitting his power and popularity.
If you remember Time magazine and many other leading magazines and newspapers and TV shows, etc., during that period, even though they hated the Iranian revolution, they regarded Imam Khomeini as a leading figure, not only for Iran, but one of the leading figures of the century. So you cannot separate the Iranian revolution from the role of Khomeini. It's one. And up to today, the people and the West and observers and analysts, they understand that the Iranian revolution is a very important factor still today, but it is only a factor because of the role of Khomeini.
Once the Islamic Revolution succeeded, the situation had changed for all of Iran's old allies. Whereas the Shah was seen as a puppet to America, the new establishment was skeptical of America. And on a wider scale, it rejected Western influence and policy in its country. Western politicians had to decide how to deal with and interact with the newfound Islamic Republic. So, what did they choose?
The West acted from the very beginning very aggressively. Why? The answer is very simple, because they were thinking that the Iranian revolution is directed against their interests. Economically, politically, strategically, on all levels. They not only viewed the Iranian revolution as a threat, they also reacted. What does it mean? They started an embargo, a boycott from the very beginning, which is strengthened even today, as you know. They organized attempts to organize a coup from within, different times, on different levels. They supported terrorist organizations from the very beginning, from different angles, etc., etc. So it was not a passive view to see the Iranian revolution as a threat. It was also an active engagement to strangle the Iranian revolution from the beginning using all means.
The impact of the revolution was immense, inside the country, regionally and internationally. Inside the country, much rebuilding had to be done. The economy and the apparatus of government had collapsed, military and security forces were in disarray, everything had to be built from scratch. In the Middle East and Muslim world, the Islamic Revolution triggered enormous enthusiasm and redoubled opposition to Western intervention and influence, arguably kick-starting groups in Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Syria and Lebanon. The Islamic Revolution was and remains extremely popular among the region's people and Muslims worldwide.
The Iranian Revolution changed the region. Changed the region, the shape, the quality, and the players in the region were either totally changed or directly changed or indirectly changed.
Let's take some specific examples. Palestine. In line with the idea that Islam should take part in political discourse and stand up to political oppression, Imam Khomeini made it an integral part of his policy to highlight the plight of the Palestinians. After the revolution, all relations with Israel were cut. Iran sees Israel as an illegal, occupying regime. In fact, just 6 months after the revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini announced the creation of International Al-Quds Day, an annual event held on the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan. It's held to express solidarity with the Palestinians and oppose Zionism. Many say Iran has played a pivotal role in keeping the Palestinian issue at the forefront and has changed the political situation of this decades-long problem.
حادثه‌ای رو که امروز داره در فلسطین ایجاد میشه این رو در اون زمان میخواستن از انجام بدن یعنی قرار بر این بوده است که فلسطین از صفحه جغرافیایی منطقه محو بشه این انقلاب اسلامی بود که موجب شد مقاومت‌های اسلامی در لبنان و فلسطین و جای جای منطقه به وجود بیاد در مقابل اهداف و برنامه‌های آمریکا و دشمن.
Over the years, many countries and groups in the region have taken aspects of the Iranian Islamic Revolution and implemented them abroad. Middle East affairs expert Sayed Vahid Hosseini believes that despite this, Iran still differs to other countries, even those who are also named Islamic republics.
امروز ما در پاکستان جمهوری اسلامی پاکستان داریم. در افغانستان هم جمهوری اسلامی افغانستان داریم. اما من فکر میکنم که هر دو کشور افغانستان و پاکستان و بسیاری از کشورهای دیگه که با نام جمهوری اسلامی مطرح است با جمهوری اسلامی ایران متفاوت است. دلیلش چیست؟ این دلیل مستقیما برمیگرده به همین سه واژه‌ای که کنار هم چیده شده، استقلال و آزادی. دو واژه استقلال و آزادی در کشورهای دیگه در واقع منهای اسلامی تا حدود زیادی مطرح است، در حالی که به نام اسلامی یاد میشه.
In the non-Muslim world, the Islamic Revolution changed the image of Islam, generating much interest in the religion, both good and bad. The Islamic Republic positioned itself as a revolutionary beacon under the slogan Neither East nor West. It rejected capitalism, American influence, and social injustice in the Middle East and the rest of the world. All of this led to speculation that the revolution might change the world balance of power. Zoom forward 32 years and many would say it has done exactly that.
Balance of forces indeed significantly changed after the Iranian revolution. That means before revolution, Iran was one of the two pillars of the famous Nixon doctrine of the Persian Gulf security. The U.S. Was dependent on two countries, Saudi Arabia and Iran, on its regional security arrangements. But this pillar, which was very dependent on the West, changed the course. So the balance of forces changed to a new setting. And I think this new setting is very important. Still, you will see the ramification of this balance of forces in the region, which was changed after the Iranian revolution.
So, after three decades, how has the equation changed internationally? Professor Opaskalski says one of the fundamental shifts has been the power of Zionist influence.
20 years, 30 years ago, the role of the Zionist entity and their propaganda was strong like a mountain. They were dominant. They're still very influential, no doubt, but people are now thinking twice. People are no more blindly following the Zionist propaganda line. And this has to do with the role of, especially the Palestinian struggle, of course, the heroic example of Gaza, but also with the role of Iran and other forces in the region. So this is changing not only the balance of forces in the region and internationally, but even here in Europe, it is giving a very good example that, for example, the role of the Zionist entity is no more unquestionable as it was before.
The Islamic Revolution of Iran in 1979 fundamentally changed the country, the region, and arguably the whole world. It was a surprise to Western countries like the United States, a surprise that they have never quite fully recovered from. In the last 32 years, Iran has faced a lot and seen many changes, from an 8-year Iraqi-imposed and Western-backed war to the post-election unrest in the capital Tehran in 2009. In our next program, on the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution, the 11th of February 2011, we will look at some of these challenges and changes that Iran has faced and assess how the Islamic Republic is doing today.